If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 192 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. And now, on to our read-along. Beginning part 8, entitled On the Water, and chapter 40, entitled I Shall Go Down to the Sea.
Lisa T. writes, the title comes from a book called Saltwater Poems and Ballads by John Masefield. It was published in 1916, so it is definitely possible that Claire may have read it. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky. And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind's song and the white sails shaking, and a gray mist on the sea's face and a gray dawn breaking. Jamie and Claire have witnessed young Ian's kidnapping and have started their journey to find him. They start where Jamie believes they have the best chance at finding more information about the ship he was on, at Havre in France with his cousin Jared.
I was surprised that France was his first choice. Wasn't there some sort of port on their side of the continent?
You mean...
Or their side of the channel?
Scotland?
Yeah.
They went from Inverness to Havre.
That's it.
Jared says they must take the Artemis. That's basically the ship he has to give them. He is now in his 70s, Jared is, Claire tells us. The Artemis is a mid-sized sloop, crew of 40 or so. It would have been on its way to Jamaica already were it not held up for repair. Now, according to Wikipedia, a sloop is a sailing boat with a single mast and a fore and aft rig. It has only one head sail. If a vessel has two or more head sails, the term cutter is used, and its mast may be set further aft than on a sloop. We find out that the sea is likely to be squally this late in the season, and also that Jamie didn't do too well on his voyage from Scotland. The prospect of his crossing the Atlantic was fearsome indeed. At least he'd have Claire with him, doctoring, surgeoning, helping him in whatever way she could. They have about a week before the Artemis is ready to sail. Meanwhile, Claire wants to find an apothecary and stock her medicine chest before they leave. Normally, the voyage to the West Indies would be about 2 months. But since they're not really in season, they're getting a late start, it's likely to be about 3 months or more. Claire thinks that there was no positive proof that young Ian's blue ship was actually headed to the West Indies. It's only that there had been record of 2 visits by the ship, they believe, named the Bruja, within the last 5 years. Her home port given as Bridgetown, Barbados. They tell Jared again about young Ian's ship. It was heavy laden. The gun ports were only, you know, a little bit off of the water, above the water. Jared is sure, thus, that it was leaving port, laden as it must have been with goods or cargo. Jared agrees with Jamie that if the pirates of the Bruja, so Claire called them, hadn't killed young Ian on the spot, they likely wanted to keep him unharmed. Quote, a healthy young male of any race could be sold as a slave or indentured servant in the West Indies for upward of £200, a respectable sum by current standards. Unquote. If they mean to sell or get rid of young Ian, and if they had an idea of the port to which they were sailing, then Jamie and Claire would at least have a decent chance of getting there and asking about him and eventually procuring him. That sounds wrong. Getting him back. Procuring him.
Well, they might have to buy him back.
That's true. That's true. I wasn't thinking about that, but absolutely. Jared was willing to risk a ship and one of his captains to help his cousin find young Ian. Jamie would, in return, sail as supercargo, the man whose duty it is to oversee the loading, unloading, sale, and disposition of the cargo. Captain and crew were in charge of sailing and running a ship, but when it comes to the welfare of the cargo, the supercargo was in charge. Jared was also a businessman, however. He made plans for other cargo to be loaded onto the Artemis, and then they take it to Jamaica, wait for its reloading with rum for the return trip. Now, the return trip wouldn't take place until about late April or early May. So between January and February and the return to Scotland in May, Jamie would be able to use the Artemis and its crew to go to Barbados or elsewhere to look for young Ian. Hopefully, that's enough time. Diana's description of the ships at the quay is beautiful. Quote, enough light seeped through the clouds for me to make out the masts of the ships moored at the quay, less than a quarter of a mile away. They swayed to and fro, their sails furled tight against the storm, rising and falling in uneasy rhythm as the waves and boats at anchor. In a week's time, I would be on one. Unquote. Erica B. writes, anybody else feel like Claire and Jamie are ever so lucky to always know or find the right folks that can help them in tricky situations? Thank God for Jared. I love how he called out Jamie on his seasickness. Jared knows he will especially suffer in the small boat and tries to make sure Jamie knows it. Oh dear. Bruja possibly turned pirate. Just another thing they don't need to be worrying about. Way to make it worse, Jared. Lisa T.
Are you trying not to sing it? I can feel like you're trying not to sing it.
Actually, I thought about it earlier today when I was taking notes and I tweeted about it, but no, I haven't thought about it until you just said it since we started the recording. Lisa T. writes, Artemis, aka the Greek goddess of wisdom. So that sounds like a good omen. The name Bruja means witchcraft, or in this case, witchcraft, like a craft, a vessel. This brings,
I know, huh?
I didn't think about that. This brings to mind Claire's near burning at the witch trial. She says, I'm trying for foreshadowing, but no spoilers.
Wait, which trial?
Excuse me?
Which trial?
The witch one.
The witch trial?
Claire has already cast herself into unknown waters. Her time travel has always cast her into the unknown. After coming through the stones, she'd imagined life with Jamie, printer's wife, smuggler's lady, and then life on a Harlan. Life on a Harley.
Mm. Wrong story. Wrong era.
And then life on a Highland farm.
They don't even have bicycles
yet. I know. All of that had been yanked away. It was once again unknown, but she was excited by it. She had been, quote, rooted as a barnacle by my attachments to Bree, to Frank, to my patients. Now fate and my own actions had ripped me loose from all those things, and I felt as though I were tumbling free in the surf at the mercy of forces a great deal stronger than myself. Unquote. So yeah, Diana was totally setting up that paragraph with the description of the ships at the quay. Then we have a very tender moment. Quote, my breath misted the glass. I traced a small heart in the cloudiness, as I had used to do for Brianna on cold mornings. Then I would put her initials inside the heart, B-E-R, for Brianna Ellen Randall. Would she still call herself Randall? I wondered, or Fraser now? I hesitated, then drew two letters inside the outline of the heart, a J and a C, unquote. Jamie then comes in. He'd been writing a letter to Jenny and Ian, and he'd waited until they'd seen Jared, and he would have some sort of plan, some prospect of telling her what they were going to do, so something active before he wrote her. After he comes in, Claire says she can tell he was writing because she smells the ink on him, and he says that she has the nose of a truffle pig.
Or a strange compliment.
As a truffle pig. Yeah, Erica B. writes, I can't imagine the anxiety Jamie must have felt writing that letter to Jenny. Poor woman has gotten so many gray hairs because of young Ian as it is. Never mind now that he's been kidnapped.
Yeah, but can we also talk about, I know that time is of the essence on all those things, but what kind of a pussy move is that?
What, to wait?
I tell you, Ginger, no. If you take my daughter somewhere and you lose her, and you write me a letter from another city, I'm going to beat your ass.
You want me to call you?
No, you come back and you tell me to my face.
Well, I call you and then I come back. You don't mean to, you mean to travel back and then tell you? No, but I get it. Martina P. writes, Claire is reflecting what her life at Jamie's side would be like now. And she seems to be happy with all options. However, a life at Lallybroch would still be her preferred one, I think. While facing a very unclear future now, she's excited and ready for the adventure. Claire would follow Jamie into a burning house if necessary. She must trust. Lisa T. writes, ironically, Claire is not distressed by her seemingly anchorless state. Jamie is her anchor despite their unknown future. Lisa T. continues, Jamie's mention of Claire having a nose as keen as a truffle pig is a humorous observation, but I've also wondered whether or not Claire having heightened senses is part of the same gift of DNA that also makes her a time traveler as well as a healer. Then we find out that Mr. Willoughby has come with them. And unfortunately, he was relegated to the stable. The maid would not have him in the house.
Or fortunately, there's significantly less feet out there.
That's true. That's true. Jamie looks up and sees the heart with the initials on the window. He picks up her hand and caresses the small letter J scar he'd made before they parted just before Culloden. Claire reassures him that she will be going with him and there's no other place she'd be. And scene. Eileen P. writes, I think Claire is realizing that reuniting with Jamie is not just about reconnecting with him. Being with Jamie Fraser is one adventure after another, and Claire is enthusiastically along for the ride. Even when Jamie realizes that he took for granted that she would want to embark on a voyage across the Atlantic in a rescue attempt, Claire doesn't skip a beat. Of course she's going. No matter what, Claire is not going to risk being separated from Jamie ever again. The next morning, Claire is making her list of things to get at the apothecary's. The most important item, alcohol, would be given to them by Jared.
See, it's just like my most important item on a shopping list, the alcohol.
Jared said he would get them that. And also, once they're on the ship, it would have to be labeled, the barrel would, as something else, or else it would be drunk, like lickety-split. And Claire is also having to revisit her herbal knowledge of some two decades ago. In this description, we get one of the rare glimpses thus far into Claire's time as a surgeon in Boston. She'd used some herbs on some of her modern patients, and people who knew it or saw it were quite shocked. Erica B. writes, I love Claire's comment here about how her experience with herbs in the 18th century helped her in the 20th. We all know how her 20th century experiences have helped her in the 18th. Just shows how her life in the past never really left her. I would love to own a copy of Claire's medicinal recipe book. I'm sure I could find something similar, but it's not the same if it doesn't have official Outlander written on it. Jamie was also working on his own list. Apparently, lime juice is a thing for ships or on ships.
Scurvy.
Yeah. Absolutely. So normally provided by the surgeon, but there's no surgeon on the Artemis given its size, we find out. But given her talent and position, it seems that Claire will be the surgeon after all.
Well, considering all of the roles he's taking on the boat.
Yeah, no kidding.
What is he? He's like, what were all the titles? Did you write them all down?
I only got two. One was...
Was one of them like super something?
Yeah, the supercargo, which I already read.
Supercargo.
And then the purser, I think. So the supercargo is in charge of the stuff once they're underway. But the purser...
Does he get a cape?
Oh, Lord. That would be funny.
Supercargo!
That would be funny. Well, he is like... I mean, he's king of men. So, I mean, he has to have some kind of cape and a crown. I don't know. Erica B. writes, I googled why they would need lime juice on ships. And the first result was the Wikipedia entry for scurvy. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I guess I just found it surprising that they would want lime juice specifically. Were limes common in Havre? I don't know. That's a good question. She continues. The Wikipedia article states, quote, a Scottish surgeon in the Royal Navy, James Lind, was the first to prove it could be treated with citrus fruit in a 1753 publication. His experiments represented the first controlled trial. It took another 40 years before the British Navy began giving out lemon juice routinely, unquote. If you go to read the article, it's pretty interesting. Then a visitor comes to Jared's to see Jamie. It's the coin dealer Jared had put Jamie in touch with. Claire quickly realizes Claire quickly realizes the coin dealer is Jewish, given his skull cap. They get down to business. Jamie wants to know if he'd sold Greek and Roman coins in the past 20 years. His aim is to find out the source, hopefully, of the ones in that treasure box. Though normally he won't share details about the identity of a customer, in this instance he does, since the purchaser is long dead. The Duke of Sandringham, Clarence Marylebone. Apparently, Le Duc had, quote, possessed an extensive collection of ancient coins, unquote. And Meyer, the coin expert, the coin dealer, Meyer's uncle had purchased the collection from Sandringham's heirs. And at the time of purchase, one of the coins Jamie was curious about, the tetradrachms, were not there. Jamie says, well, they wouldn't have been. So my guess is sometime between the time that they were purchased and then ended up in that treasure box, and then Jamie went out to see them or get them or whatever, then he had to have seen them to know they were there, right? So he had to have seen them at some point. So either he took them and then sold them later, or, you know what I mean? So he either took them on one of his trips out there, or they were in there and he left them there and he was just asking about them. So either way, it can go either way. Eileen P. Apparently, you can chop off the Duke of Sandringham's head, but his machinations continue decades later. I'm sure he would have appreciated Jamie's first discovering the seal's treasure in the nude. Was the seal's treasure Sandringham's contribution to the Jacobite rebellion? Did he have a confidant possibly connected to the Bruja? The mystery continues. Joe B. writes, Meyer, the coin dealer, a refugee from the regular persecution of Jews across Europe, provides further understanding of the Silky's treasure. Like many things in Outlander, there are explanations given, although we have to wait indeterminate times for them. The treasure is not the gold from Louis that may have let the rebellion succeed, but a smaller, more transportable, nonetheless useful contribution from our old frenemy, the Duke of Sandringham, who could give his resources to Jacobites if he wanted to or not. Are there some timing issues in this bit? Claire recalls the Duke dying in March of 1746 and before Charles reached England. Is it an errant recollection of events by Claire or just me? The Duke died after Falkirk, which is January 17, 1746. So by the time it all went down with Mary and Hugh Monroe, it might have been a fortnight, so that's late January or very early February, and Charles had already gone into England and was on the retreat by then. Or is it just me? You got me there, Joby. I have not done your calculations. I had not done those calculations yet.
At least all I know is that when they said Duke of Sandringham, I chuckled out loud and felt rather smug. I was like,
Lisa T. writes, because of the sea imagery, I thought this coin description was worth noting. Quote, Jamie studied the rows of coins with close attention, then gently nudged a silver piece about the size of an American quarter. Three leaping porpoises circled its edge, surrounding a charioteer in the center. Unquote. Claire inquires about Meyer's name, and he says that the Jews of Frankfurt are not allowed to use family names, but that neighbors called them after an old red shield that was painted outside their home many years before. And after he'd gone, Claire asks Jamie what red shield was in German. Jamie answers, Rothschild. Lisa T. writes, from Wikipedia. The Rothschild, in English it's pronounced Rothschild, but in German it is Rothschild. So Rothschild family is a wealthy family descending from Maya Amschel Rothschild, a court Jew in the German Landgraves of Hesse-Kassel in the Free City of Frankfurt, who established his banking business in the 1760s. Unlike most previous court Jews, Rothschild managed to bequeath his wealth and established an international family through his five sons, who established themselves in London, Paris, Frankfurt, Vienna, and Naples.
Hmm. He shows up in a lot, or somebody from that family shows up in a lot of my historical novels I've read over the years. There was also, he was in The Eight as well.
Oh, yes, I remember that. We may have to do...
Don't say it out loud.
I have to. No, it has nothing to do with the show, but it's still dangerous to say out loud. You and I, for giggles, may have to do some, maybe like some Facebook Live. I don't know what, but nothing in our feed, but we may need to do a little, for funsies, The Eight.
We could.
I know there's a sequel, I think, right? But we don't have to do
it. It's not very good.
Okay, I hope
shouldn't
Catherine
even
Neville
said that out loud, but it's not very
Catherine
good.
Catherine Neville, we still love you. I still love you, at least.
Well, the problem is it was released so far after the first one that it felt like it was trying too hard to be the first one. And I was like, the first one was just so perfect.
Oh my gosh, that book had me. I could not sleep with that book. I mean, not like that. I mean,
I sleep with that book all the time.
I mean, I read it when I was in Germany in the summer of 1993. I remember this. And when I should have been reading German, but I was reading English. Oh my gosh. I remember staying up till like 3 a.m. like for nights in a row, and I couldn't read 24/7, but oh my gosh. That was the only one I told you to read, or did you tell me about that?
You actually told me about that.
I think it's like the only time ever.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not going to lie, you really sucked at selling it. That's why it took me so long to read it.
Because it's about chess. I mean, how do you sell it?
I'm intrigued by chess. I don't know, but you were not very good at it. However, I've sold you on books over the years, you're not good at that.
I still need to read the...
Maybe someday.
I still need to read The Night Circus.
Yes, you do. I mean, and that's a standalone.
Good.
Okay, tangent complete.
Jamie thinks it's likely the seal's treasure was the Duke's, and likely the person who sent the Bruja was likely the person who put it there. They discuss the worth of the treasure and how convenient a treasure it was, easy to conceal, to have made it likely that it was indeed the Duke's, who, as we know, was playing both sides. Claire thinks about the money and if the Jacobite rebellion had been successful and she'd never had to return to the stones. But then likely she and Brianna would both have died in childbed. So, I mean, it's not a good thing or a wonderful thing, but it's for the best, because if she had stayed back, she and Brianna would have died, and Jamie, you know, if Culloden still happened, Jamie would have gone to prison anyway or died. But yeah, so at least the way they did things, they got back together. So what happened, Summer, do you think, in the 10 years between Culloden, when the treasure was around the time when the treasure was supposedly placed on the island, or approximately, and Duncan Kerr about 10 years later coming up with the treasure or babbling about it, and Jamie hearing him being called to translate and all that?
With who specifically? What are you asking me about? You said what happens in the time period with what?
Treasure. What happened in the 10
years? I think
it's
sat there.
I know that. I'm saying, what do you think the purpose of it was? Was it was put there to be picked up by someone? Do you think it was put there to be picked up by one of the Duke's men, and the Duke only would have shared that information once he got a note from someone that it had arrived, and because he died, there was no one to tell and thus no one to send someone? And
I think that's as good a guess as anything. It was probably... Suppose somebody was supposed to pick it up and then never
did.
Okay,
so yeah, so let's agree on that. But I guess my question was, let's say that that's what it was, not what happened to the treasure, but why all of a sudden 10 years later was Duncan Kerr someone to find it or talk about it? How did he suddenly come up with it? Do you think he was an early confidant and just was like stark raving mad and got sick and started talking about it? And that's why he wasn't really well, they couldn't understand him, but... you know what I'm saying? Why suddenly 10 years after the fact does someone like Duncan Kerr have knowledge of it and start talking about it? Or was it because he knew for some reason and he was getting sick that he wanted to make sure someone knew about it? That part confuses me, or it's a mystery.
I don't know. I think it is a mystery. I think a lot of different things could have happened. It could have been that he was not a very good swimmer.
Duncan Kerr?
And he knew about it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and couldn't get out there and get it.
How did he know about it? That's what I mean.
It might, you never know. It could have been something handed down orally, generation to generation. By generation to generation, I mean like person to person over 10 years, not generation. But I mean, I think that is an excellent question for Diana.
Okay, then. Erica B. continues. Claire wonders if the seal's treasure would have made a difference if it had made it to Charles Stewart. As part of his stream of consciousness, she mentions that she and Bree would likely be dead in childbirth. Do we ever learn the details of Claire's pregnancy delivery that made it so risky? I feel like all the mentions have been vague. Now, I will say this. I was having a discussion with someone, and I don't think it was you, Summer. I think it was online with someone. But I was having a discussion, or we were talking about how Claire... This dangerous pregnancy. Now, she didn't obviously know when she was like 2 months pregnant or whatever. Before she went through the stone, she did not know she was going to have necessarily another dangerous pregnancy. And her pregnancy up until the time she lost Faith wasn't, I mean, she had intermittent bleeding, but she didn't necessarily have a lot of bad signs. It was the thing happened, the placenta, you know, detaching, right? It was a thing that happened toward the end that is how she lost Faith. And then I could imagine, okay, and I'm not a doctor or a nurse, and I don't play one on TV or on the podcast, but I am curious if having had that happen once predisposes you to, can that number one cause permanent damage? And number two, does that predispose you to being in that danger area later on in a having a higher risk pregnancy automatically? So those are questions for an expert. So,
well, the one thing that you will never be able to accurately be able to pinpoint why is because we don't know what they did in when Faith was born. So there could have been
Faith was born or Brianna?
Faith was born because we don't know the complications that could have arisen from the way they delivered her.
Oh, you mean what the damage that could have been done to her by taking Faith out?
Right. So exactly. So there could have been, who knows what happened, or if they, and then when Master Raymond reached back inside of her and pulled something out, and you know, we don't know if his hands were clean. I mean, there's any number of things that could have.
But did he just heal her?
Yeah,
of her?
But just because he healed her of the thing that healed her, but then he also might have had some grummy ass fingernails. I don't know. Point is we don't know.
Exactly. We don't know if it was the fact of the way she lost Faith caused her future damage or put her future pregnancies in peril, number one. Number two, we don't know if she lost Faith in a way that wouldn't have necessarily, you know, condemned her to have dangerous pregnancies forever. But like you said, if the way they, quote, cleaned her up and, you know, removed Faith and all of that, if that could have caused some kind of damage, or if before she even lost Faith, she was, that's just her, you know, some women have dangerous pregnancies. So
she may have a weird tilted
or something, yeah,
uterus.
Yeah. So yeah, there are many possibilities. But the discussion I was having was along the lines of, if she had stayed, that was kind of an iffy thing, right? Yeah, of course, no one wants to see Jamie and Claire parted. But if she had stayed, there was a good chance that she and Brianna would have both died. And this person said to me, I don't remember that. And I'm like, I don't think I'm making it up. Because things like that are so dramatic to me that it was yet another reason, not defensive, but another reason to kind of chalk up to thank God she went back. You know what I mean? Not just to deliver a baby hopefully in a safer environment. But I mean, now at the end, she ended up having a dangerous pregnancy, or at least a dangerous delivery.
True.
Martina P. writes, Jared has done business with the coin dealer Meyer Rothschild before. We learn from his visit that the Duke of Sandringham is involved with the treasure. Are we supposed to believe that Jared's money could also be tied to the treasure? Surely a successful wine merchant would have the means to financially support the Jacobites. Would it have changed the outcome if the money had reached Prince Charles? And that's what Claire goes on and on about. And it includes this discussion we just had about the baby and her and the baby dying or potentially dying in the childbed. We will, as readers, we always will probably, but Claire goes back and forth on the what ifs. You and I can go back and forth on the what ifs. Claire, I mean, all of us readers always wonder, oh, well, but if you know what? It's, and I don't think we'll stop that. I think it's natural to wonder or to think about what, you know, Diana could have done, not to change the story, but to save things if they had, she had indeed stayed or whatever. She realizes that the ifs are, what ifs are only, are never helpful. So with that, they're on their way to Paris. She finds that Master Raymond's apothecary is gone and that he's been gone for several years. She finds this out from a pawnbroker whose shop, I guess, is right in that area, in the area of his previous apothecary. Mr. Willoughby was with her as she is out and about, and he is surprisingly knowledgeable about herbs and medicines. He recommends she get some dried eel balls coated in mud. So she does. She gets a few.
I love how she's like, they didn't cost a lot, so I bought a few of the nasty things.
I know.
Like, she clearly didn't want them, but she's like, I didn't want to hurt his feelings.
Oh, gosh.
So I got a couple.
Erica B. writes, Claire heads to the apothecary's shop and is disappointed to find that it isn't there and she can't see her friend, Master Raymond. She was surprised to discover in her shopping adventure that Mr. Willoughby is quite knowledgeable in herbal medicines. This little bit surprises me in that I think the Chinese culture is quite known for its use of herbs in alternative and natural medicine. And so why would Claire be so surprised that a Chinaman, and I hate to say that, I'm so sorry, that a Chinaman,
a man from China.
I'm just going to get in trouble with this, no matter how I say it, knows information like this. Perhaps she didn't know or realize this. I don't know. I don't know if by the 1960s, Chinese or traditional Chinese medicine, TCM, was widespread enough in the, I mean, it was the 60s, so I think it's beginning to creep in, but it's not even that widely known today, although it's hugely known compared to what it was back then. I mean, I think it's possible she didn't necessarily know.
I'm just surprised that she's surprised by anything in the past anymore at this point. I'm just, you know, because, I mean, considering it's so funny because, you know, she was talking earlier about people looking at her funny for using, you know, old timey, historical cures on patients. And they'd be like, ew, why would you do that? Because as modern medicine moves forward, nobody wants to do the old stuff anymore. They're like, do the new stuff. This is clearly better because it's new. And you see that now it's actually, you're starting to see a lot of people turning back to more holistic things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like almost cyclical where, you know, like clothes come in style every like 20 or 30 years, the same clothes, like everything you think you'd never see again. Like, I'm pretty sure mullets are on their way back.
Oh man, please no.
Or did they already have their day again?
I don't know.
Anyway, but I feel like it's kind of the same thing. Like I think that her being surprised by it is just strange to me, that she's just like, really? Why would you know that? When she's that exact same, you know, stranger in a strange land in the present that he was here in France.
Lisa T. writes, this reminds me of the healthy balls scene, but it also reminds me that Claire is open to all types of medicine and healing. Think Bouton. As they're out and about, she sees the Reverend Campbell. He is still planning on traveling to the West Indies, but says he had urgent business in France. And he says to Claire that his sister is somewhat improved. Now Willoughby asks, after the Reverend walks away, he has to go. Willoughby asks if Reverend, the word Reverend, means, quote, most holy fella. unquote. Claire says, yes. And he replies, not so holy. That Reverend fella. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Willoughby had seen him at the brothel, Madame Jeanne's. Quote, not loud talking then, very quiet then. Unquote. I just can't help but wonder if we should never quote Willoughby. Because if I try and quote him, I sound like an asshole.
Oh, Ginger. You always sound a little bit like an asshole.
What does that mean?
Regardless of quoting Willoughby.
Why would you say that?
Why do I say anything?
I don't know, to get my goat.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy to get. My goat's a hoor. I'm just kidding.
If anyone in this world had a goat whore, it would be you.
It's late. Martina P. writes, Claire and Mr. Willoughby run into Reverend Campbell, who is just super creepy. Mr. Willoughby has some knowledge about him and dislikes him a great deal. The feeling is mutual. The purpose of this meeting is for us to learn that the Reverend, as well, will be heading to the West Indies. Good reminder. At dinner that night, Jared says he has a list of useful acquaintances for them of his friends in the West Indies. We also find out over dinner that Jamie was made a Freemason while in prison. But it's a member, he would be a member of the Inverness Lodge. So this is how Jared is able to introduce Jamie to certain people in the West Indies. Claire is like, excuse me, what? Wait, roll back the tape. What? This reminded Claire of all the things she still didn't know about Jamie and their 20 years apart. She's reminded of their wedding night when he said he'd not press her for things she wasn't ready or able to tell him, but just that when she did tell him something, it'd be the truth. They're playing footsie under the table, Jared unawares. Now, in Outlander, it was something...
You know who I think is aware?
Mr. Willoughby?
Exactly.
Or Candida?
I think he's got like footsie radar.
Oh Lord, he's in the stable. He's not allowed to be inside. Wait, they had stables.
He knows. Oh, I'm just saying he knows.
Oh, he knows. He's foot fetish omniscient.
I'm just saying he's got footsie dar.
In Outlander, it was something like, quote, there was room for secrets, but not for lies, unquote. Now, quote, there was more than respect between us now and room for all our secrets to be known in good time, unquote. Erica B. writes, after that scene, we learn that Jamie is a Freemason, like so many in that era. The aspect...
Illuminati!
Was Hamilton next, right? A Freemason? It would not surprise me. Like so many of the founding fathers were. Washington was. Google it. I think they all...
Washington definitely was a Freemason, but let me find out.
Was... Are you Googling it?
Yes.
Hamilton. If I had asked you about Jefferson, you would have been like, I don't know, keep going. But because I mentioned Hamilton...
Exactly. Because, you know, I read that whole book and I don't remember.
That's true. I forgot. I haven't finished that book.
Was Alexander Hamilton a Freemason? While the historical records provide no documentary proof of Hamilton's membership as a Freemason, the evidence of his connections to and close associations with very prominent and powerful Freemasons is indisputable.
Mm. So probably yes.
So, well, if he wasn't, he knew enough people.
Yeah.
Because we all know that Washington was.
Big
and... And initially, the affair Hamilton had was covered up by Freemason and future U.S. President James Monroe.
Mm.
And then, for some reason, I don't understand what this whole article is called. It's called Alexander Hamilton, Freemasons, and the Death of Edgar Allan Poe. So I'm sure there's a link in between all those things, but that was pretty random. Anyway.
Erica B. continues. The aspect that interests me is how it has changed a bit. My husband is a Freemason, and it's not a secret. Like Jared says, the rites are what they do in meetings, but knowing that someone is a Mason isn't a secret. Hell, we have Masonic stickers on our cars, and my husband has a Masonic license plate. I'm curious if they practice any of the rites in the prison, or if it was more the camaraderie that comes with being in a fraternity of that nature. I wonder if this little exchange will make it into the show, as the Freemasonry bit pops up here and again throughout the books. Let's put it this way. Back in the day, it was if you're a dude, it was convenient to be a Freemason. That's all I'm going to say, because you never know when it could help you.
Well, it's like anything else. It's like joining the cool club. If all of the most influential people are in one specific club, why wouldn't you want to join that club to know all of those people? And what else did they have to do once the sun went down other than boink their wives?
Oh, goodness. Unless you're in Ardmore.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what kind of Freemasonry meeting you can have in prison.
I mean, he didn't say
other than practice the handshakes.
Oh, well,
isn't there a handshake?
I mean, I don't know. I've never been a Freemason. Lisa T. writes, the next bit reminds me of this conversation in Outlander. And yes, Leary, too. Quote, your mouth looks a bit swollen, Jamie. Get thumped by a horse, did you? I asked wickedly. Aye, he answered, narrowing his eyes. Swung its head when I wasn't looking. He spoke placidly, but I felt a large foot come down on top of mine under the table. It rested lightly at the moment, but the threat was explicit. Too bad those fillies can be dangerous, I said innocently. The foot pressed down hard as Alex said, Filly? You're not working fillies now, are you, lad? I used my other foot as a lever. That failing, I used it to kick his ankle sharply. Jamie jerked suddenly. Martina P. writes, Claire is pondering the fact that Jamie is a Freemason. She recognizes that there are things she doesn't know about Jamie. She makes the sweet reference to their wedding day, which is my favorite part of this chapter. There is room for secrets, but not lies. Joe B. writes, A welcome back to Jared. This generous, useful, but canny man provides the means of their search. Like Jamie, he integrates the superstitious and mystical into his everyday life as both a sailor and a Freemason, whose rites are meant to be kept secret even from partners of Masons. Other than the provision of the ship, the links the Masons' lodges will provide them are potentially very useful. Masons are often men of influence and means, so this is no insignificant offer. Jamie briefly states he was made a Mason in prison, but we have to wait some time before we know how and why. For an outlandish coincidence, the episode of Midsummer Murders that Sam was in centered around Freemasonry. Season 10, Episode 3, King's Crystal. That Jamie is a Mason is a surprise to Claire, and it makes her reflect on her time back with Jamie, how things like this will come up, and the time gap that has seemed small now gapes wide, and the integrating of new Jamie with the old must begin again. As ever, Jamie knows what Claire needs, and the invitation of his foot reassures her. They're together, and together they will bridge the divides. So the next morning, Jared and Jamie and Mr. Willoughby go out on errands. Claire goes to visit an old friend. Okay, before I go forward, can I tell you, I forgot this ding-dong part in the chapter, and I was like, oh, man, there was more than a tear break. It wasn't a bawling, but it was, I'm like, really? I forgot about it, but this is so touching. It's like, it's a nice touch. It's like a touchstone. It's a reflection back on Claire's past and her future, because Jamie is her future, and what she does is visit part of Jamie as well. But it's kind of not forgetting, but kind of laying to rest a little bit more. Never, ever, ever, ever gone, but never forgotten, but so touching. And I had forgotten about this part. Quote, 20 years ago, there had been two people in Paris whom I cared for deeply. Master Raymond was gone, dead or disappeared. The chances that the other might still be living were slim, but still I had to see, before I left Europe, for what might be the last time. With my heart beating erratically, I stepped into Jared's coach and told the coachman to drive to L'Hôpital des Anges. Unquote. And then, quote, The grave was set in the small cemetery reserved for the convent, under the buttresses of the nearby cathedral. It was a small stone, made of a soft white marble. A pair of cherub's wings spread out across the top, sheltering the single word that was the stone's only other decoration, faith, it read. I stood looking down at it until my vision blurred. I had brought a flower, a pink tulip. I knelt down and laid it on the stone, stroking the soft curve of the petal with a finger, as though it were a baby's cheek. Unquote. And then Claire, we find out she was able to meet Mother Hildegard. Mother Hildegard says, quote, I have noticed that time does not really exist for mothers with regard to their children. It does not matter greatly how old the child is. In the blink of an eye, the mother can see the child again as it was when it was born, when it learned to walk, as it was at any age, at any time, even when the child is fully grown up and a parent itself. Unquote. Claire shares that she, indeed, had had one more child. And it turns out there is an entire row of small stones, the children of the nuns, Mother Hildegard tells her. that shocked me. That was a little bit funny and very touching. And
but then it gave me so many more questions.
I know. What was she hiding?
Because no, it's not even that. What about the children of the nuns who don't die? Did they kill them all? Do they kill the children of nuns?
I see what you're saying. No, I doubt it. No, I see what you're saying, though. Good question.
So it's like, do they all die and end up there? Or do they find other homes for them? Or do they just live with the nuns and then become nuns by association? Or do they kill them all and bury them in this?
No, children of the nuns means that the women were nuns when they conceived, I believe. However, your question is valid. Does it mean like every single nun who had a kid, it died or they killed it? Yeah, they're not going to kill it. And sure, every single one that's not going to happen. It's very unlikely that they all died. But the ones who did die, that would be where they were. But surely many of them lived and then they would be adopted out. That's just my guess. And then we learn of another row, quote, against the far wall, but still in consecrated ground, was a row of small stone tablets, each with a single name, Bouton. Below each name was a Roman numeral, 1 through 15, unquote. Bouton 16 was there with them now. Mother Hildegard tells her to come in, and she'll find things to give her for the journey. And in closing, we find out Mother's age. She is 83. Now, what I want to know, since we have mention of witchcraft or a witchcraft and Freemasonry and the number 83, I want to know if there's any kind of numerological significance to 83. So someone find that out for us. We would love to know. Erica B. writes, anybody else get a bit teary at this section in L'Hôpital des Anges? When I read this bit in my head, I heard the music from Faith's episode. So melancholy and tender, making this little bit have the much more emotion. I am curious, though, as to why they didn't put the date or even the year on the stone. Well, the year and the date, I don't know. But I also think, it's not that I was never moved by this. I was. But I think since the series now has visually adapted and, you know, aurally with the music, musically adapted Faith to screen. And especially since we talked with Bear and we learned about his physical condition, not exactly, but that he was recovering from an illness when he wrote this, just makes it even that much more touching. So all of this stuff and the descending line, the cascading of tears, all of that we've heard that others have said too, made tears come to my eyes when reading this to take notes. I've always been moved by this, especially since it's like their last, because as she says, she doesn't know she'll ever be in Europe again. So this is, in a way, her saying goodbye to friends because she doesn't know she'll ever see Mother Hildegard again. And also, of course, to her child. Because it's even more, I think, I didn't think about this until just now. It's even more poignant that she's already said goodbye to her living child. And now this is her other child. She only has two. And the one she knows she gave up likely forever. And this one she knows has gone forever. So she definitely is going to want to spend some time there in that cemetery. But yeah, it definitely, I think having seen the visual adaptation of it and the musical representation of it, I mean, it definitely made it, I think, more poignant for me. What about you, Sam?
You know, what's funny is that I did notice it and I didn't get your tear prick issue.
We got it using the word.
No, I said your.
Doesn't matter. You can blame it on me because I own it. I made it up. As far as I know, I made it
nasty.
Up.
Nasty.
Oh, Summer.
I don't like it. Anyway, I did not have that issue.
Got it.
My point
but
is.
But you just got Southern. What's this about?
I knew that you were going to bring it up.
Really? The tear prick? Or the, I didn't say tear prick until you did. You mean, was I going to bring up the scene?
You said it. You did say
it. I didn't.
You listened back to this. You've said it in the last like 5 minutes.
I was reading. Someone else wrote it.
Ew, someone else wrote it?
Other people.
It's catching?
Oh, it's been catching for 2 years.
Shame on you, listeners. Egging her on. Someone has said. Making her feel like she's normal.
What? Someone has said they want a t-shirt with hashtag Tiprick on it.
God, no.
Oh, gosh. We do need to have a store, though. Different little things that you say or that I say are like, it must have been Jared. Or like hashtag tear prick. I don't know. Something like that.
Oh, you know, my image in my head of the Jared thing is like, it would have to have like a caption bubble that was all jagged. To accurately
describe that sound that came out of my mouth.
Yes. And maybe look like it's coming out of a screaming cat's face.
Oh, no, that's not nice to cats.
So you agree.
Summer, that's not I nice. Make that sound horrific on purpose. It is supposed to be a disgusting sound. I'm not trying to sound, you think I'm trying to sound pretty? Oh my gosh, because if you are, you're so wrong. It's not supposed to be pretty. It's supposed to be horrific. Which is why I...
Well, you succeeded.
Thank you. I thought so. That's why it's so funny, because it's so awful. Erica B. writes, the tone lightens with the discussion of the nuns' babies and those who are in the graveyard. Then she spots 15 boutons. Holy moly, that's a lot of dogs.
I mean, how does a dog apply for the position of bouton? I mean, do they like bring one in and they're like, nope, you are not cut from the right cloth?
If they're young enough, she can probably train them. Any of them.
Like, I guess.
But they didn't show us.
But you would have,
she didn't show us.
I feel
the
like that type of
bouton.
I know, but the ones who didn't make
she
it.
Had to get rid of them somehow.
These are all the nuns' boutons. Oh, Lord. My boutons are over here. Yeah. just not all dogs are cut out for the same jobs. So what are the odds that she's like, oh, well, we adopted this dog, but he didn't work out. He just ended up being, you know, that weird dog that followed people around and didn't do much of good
he
for
would
anybody.
Eat the specimens. Sorry, that's funny. Joe B. writes, Mother Hildegard offers Claire a comfort she cannot receive from anyone else, including Jamie. Sadly, she's the only other person who has seen Faith. She tells Claire of her observation that time doesn't really exist for mothers for their children. How reassuring for Claire, for whom time itself has so strongly influenced her relationships with her children. I've wondered why Claire doesn't appear to see Louise, given what she did for Claire after her miscarriage. I'm hoping she did, but we just don't know. Now, I am going to step in here and say, Joe B., I wondered that too. I probably wondered in the past, but since this most recent reading, when I first thought she was going to see a friend, I knew she was going to L'Hôpital, but I did wonder before I finished the chapter, because obviously I forgot. I was hoping that she would see Louise, but yeah, no go. Were you hoping she...
She might not even be alive.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But Louise was approximately her age, maybe a little young, probably a little bit younger.
Probably younger.
Lisa T. writes, this is such a beautiful and heartbreaking passage. I'm sure Claire never expected to visit Faith's grave again. The description of the tulip being like a baby's cheek recalls Claire's telling Jamie about baby Faith in DIA. Quote, the light had shone through her skin as well, glowing in the roundness of cheek and buttock with the light that pearls have, still and cool, with a strange touch of the water world still on them, unquote. The difference is that the tulip is pink from Jared's conservatory, the color of living flesh and not still and cool from the water. The thought of Mother Hildegard walking the wards at night is very comforting, as though she is a guardian angel. Claire then learns about the space where Faith is buried, quote, the space is reserved for the sisters, a few benefactors of the L'Hôpital, and those they love, unquote. Children of the nuns and even Mother Hildegard's sweet bouton are buried there. By burying Faith here, Mother Hildegard has laid her to rest in a place most sacred to her, and in doing so, acknowledges Claire as a sister of sorts as well. With this gesture, she gives Claire a place of her own in the 18th century. Jamie's family is all buried at Lallybroch, but Faith is safely buried in France, where Claire's family is originally from, in Mother Hildegard's sacred ground. Just as she did when she was traveling through the stones, Claire has now provisioned herself and said farewell to her other daughter. Oh, man, you got me there, Lisa. I thought about Brie, but I didn't think about getting ready for a journey. She is ready for her next voyage to begin. One more we thought, Lisa says. Claire leaves Brie in the care of Joe and leaves Faith in the care of Mother Hildegard.
All right, and that was chapter 40. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 41, entitled We Set Sail.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
I dreamt it last night that my young love came in.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.